everyone. Welcome to Reach Higher Riverside, where we share all Reach Higher stories happening across the nation. My name is Priscilla Grijalva, and I am your Reach Higher Riverside podcast host. On this month's episode, we have an interview with Olivia Carter. She was named the 2019 Missouri School Counselor of the Year and the 2021 National School Counselor of the Year based on her ability to create lasting change within the profession through leadership, collaboration, and advocacy. I'm so excited to share this interview, and I hope you all enjoy it. Hi, everyone. I'm with Olivia Carter. I'll go ahead and let her tell us a little bit about herself.
Hi. Well, I don't even know where to start. I am born and raised a Missourian, and I am a school counselor support specialist now, but it's been a weird path getting there. So I got my bachelor's degree in psychology in 2011 from Southeast Missouri State University, and then immediately knew that I was going to go into school counseling. And so I graduated with my master's in 2013 in school counseling, and actually started provisionally at a school in 2012. So there was a counseling shortage in our area, and I just happened to get a job and do my internship at the same time. So I was at that school. Yeah, I was at that school for 4 years. It was a great experience. I feel like I learned a lot. I made a lot of mistakes. And then I got to move forward, and I got my job in my current district that's in Cape Girardeau. So the same place that I went to college. And so I was in an elementary there, and that's in 2021, that's when I won School Counselor of the Year, and that's where I was. And then this past year, I got a district role where I'm supporting the school counselors in our district and really supporting the trauma-informed practices throughout the buildings and the restorative practices. So all sort of the social emotional things happening in our buildings.
So going back to school counseling, like, is that something you were thinking about before, or did it just kind of like happen? As you said, there was a shortage and you just decided to go that pathway?
Yeah. So, I feel like we're coming up on a shortage, really. We have 3 openings in our district now. I have decided to go back into school counseling full time at our junior high. So I didn't even leave my district. I've been at CAPE for, this will be my 6th or 7th, it'll be my 7th year next year. So, yeah, I'm going to be at the junior high. It's been something where I've still had some, you know, I've been running some groups. I've been working with some individuals. I did some maternity leave subbing type things where I was in classrooms. And I don't know. Once I got in there, I feel like maybe I left a little bit prematurely. But I also think I was put in this position for a really specific purpose, to get restorative practices kind of up and going. And what we did was we've made a manual, we've gotten some timelines, I'm going to continue doing the PD throughout our district on that. So it was sort of, maybe this had an expiration date, and yeah, I'm ready to go back and do some school counseling and be at a different grade level. I'll be at a junior high. So that's new for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love middle school. I've done high school for 17 years. And this year I'm split middle school and high school. And I have to say, middle school is my favorite, and I never thought it would be. So I hope that you enjoy it.
I feel the same way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a good change though. So you were just talking about how you were named Counselor of the Year. You were named the 2019 Missouri School Counselor of the Year and the 2021 National School Counselor of the Year by the American School Counselor Association. Can you talk about what that moment meant for you?
Yeah. So
moments. You got 2 moments there.
Yeah. There were so many moments. It still feels really surreal to be, even to be named Missouri School Counselor of the Year. I feel like Missouri, I don't want to brag, but we're like the heart of school counseling.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think our organization does such a good job developing us and ensuring that we're ready to go out in the workforce. But You know, 2019 specifically felt like a roller coaster for me. So it started out with the Blues won the Stanley Cup, and I have to give them a shout out every time. But and then Addie was born in August of 2019. So
and that's your daughter?
Yes. Okay. Yes. My daughter was born in August of 2019. She's my younger kid. My son is, he's five now. So, that was one of those things where she was born and then they took her to the neonatal intensive care unit. And, so that was 2 hours away. We went from Cape to St. Louis and she had surgery and it was 3 days later. And I got this text from my principal that was like, hey, I need you to check your messages. And I remember being like, I am on maternity leave. Like, my kid just had surgery. Like, there's just a lot going on here, but I knew it was important. And it seemed like it was good news. And I feel like our school was always getting good news at that point. So I had no idea. and good. So I get a video from the staff and it's them telling me that I'm elementary school counselor of the year from Missouri. So like that just totally blew my mind. And it was so exciting. And it was just, again, a roller coaster of emotions. And then when I got back from maternity leave, they tricked me. They've tricked me so many times. They tricked me again and told me that I had won Missouri School Counselor of the Year. And it was just, it's huge when this happens because the whole building celebrates. Like it's so great to have those moments. And I hope that, you know, especially with that staff, I just believe in them so deeply that they'll have more of these moments where people are winning national awards. That sounds wild, but
yeah, no, that's good. And they celebrate. That's awesome.
Yeah. Because I think, it's an incredible staff. So that was amazing. And then of course it just sort of rolled from there. Addie had surgery again in January and then in March we shut down. So that was 2020. Mm-hmm. And at that point it was like, it was time to start submitting information for School Counselor of the Year for ASCA. And they had us make the videos and, all that stuff. And I thought, I'll do it. Like I turned it in last minute and which sounds silly, but, it was. And so then I get this call from Laura Ross, in the fall of 2020, we had gone back to school already. And I just remember her leaving a voicemail on my phone. She's like, this is Laura Ross. And I was like freaking out. And so I called her back and I'm like, I'm fangirling. She's like, well, you shouldn't be because you're a finalist for School Counselor of the Year. And I was like, I'm what? And obviously it was completely different for me. I feel like it was just I was the only School Counselor of the Year that's done everything via Zoom. All of the interviews were on Zoom. The celebration was on Zoom. And it was just an interesting way to experience that. Obviously, they did an incredible job celebrating me, even though it was just the weirdest year that we've ever had. And the other part of it is they brought all of my finalist cohort back this past year to do the in-person SCOI celebration, which was really, really special. So we got to bond with 2022's final cohort. And that was the first time we all five got to be together, which was really cool. And so, it's just been, so nice. And ASCA does such a good job with all of that. So they blew it out, even though it was a weird year.
And that's good. I'm glad they got to celebrate you guys too, because I know like you had a virtual and having it in person is so much better, right?
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, humbled and honored. And they're just, I've looked up to the School Counselors of the Year for so long. You know, you get the ASCA magazine and you just like read their stories. Everybody's just so different and cool. And to be honored among them is just, it's so special.
Yeah, I totally get the fangirl stuff. I remember in Boston, I met Brian Coleman and I was just like so excited. I went up to him like, hey, can I have a picture? And I just remember like, he's probably like, who is this person? Like, oh, by the way, I'm Priscilla and I'm a school counselor. But I totally get that. You just kind of get in shock. And I think it's just because we're passionate about what we do and we just love to meet people who are just as passionate or even more, right?
Yes, doing such a good job. Yeah.
So what is your favorite part about being a school counselor?
Definitely the kids. Yeah. And especially after this year, I know that. But I think it's just really, there's something special about the bond that you can build with students, and how, even if, you know, I love to see kids excited about coming to school, but even if they're not excited about coming to school, if they're excited to see you or to be in your office, or they at least feel comfortable and safe there, like, that's what this is all about. And so that, I mean, that's why we do what we do, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's it for me.
That's awesome. No, that's important about the kids. Can you talk about the trauma-informed approach you implemented at Jefferson Elementary School, and how do you use data in your program?
Yeah, I feel like this is my most asked question is the trauma-informed practices. And so, which it is huge, and it was a huge, like, pivotal moment for me. So trauma-informed practices are something that I learned about whenever I went to Missouri School Counselor Association Fall Conference several years ago. There were two school counselors. They were like, we're leading this initiative at our building. They were doing an incredible job at it. And so I went back and I read the book that they recommended, and I brought it to my principals and I said, this is like the missing piece. We had some success with like the behavior program that we were using, but we knew that it wasn't enough, and we knew that we wanted our students to have more, and we needed to see more growth because our data wasn't really changing. And so and they were on board. So what they allowed me to do was do some optional PD after school, and I did, and it was National School Counseling Week. So I picked like a Wednesday afternoon and it started snowing. So in Missouri, when it snows, everybody hits Walmart up and gets bread and milk and then goes home. So I had like six staff members stay. But those staff members, after they heard it, they advocated that I give it to the whole staff. So on a PD day, then I presented, you know, just like, what is trauma? How can it show up in our classrooms? And what are like a couple things we can do in those moments? Yeah. And it was really powerful that those teachers were like, hey, Olivia needs to do this outside. Like, she needs to do this during PD. And so when the staff heard it, they were like, we really like that. That's something totally different. It feels natural and we need to go there. So they then developed a committee, and I guess we developed a committee and took a huge group to a trauma-informed conference then. So we focused on it. And we brought back like things that really resonated with us. So the biggest thing I think that our principals were really good at doing was ensuring that our teachers were well. And that's not an easy job where we were, especially at that point in time. So they ensured that teachers got 40 minutes of lunch, uninterrupted, no duties. They ensured that all of their plan times were protected, so they weren't gonna drop sub. They weren't going to have like collaboration on times that they were not supposed to be collaborating. And that was really meaningful for staff members. That improved mental health greatly. And I know those things seem small, but also from an administrative side, also like the manpower behind that is a lot. I realized that not every school has the sheer like number of teachers that we were able to have. But that was really important. That was the foundation of it all. And then really from there, you know, we had these practices in place that I will say what we undid a lot. We undid a lot of really rigid practices and thought of more flexible practices. For example, one of the places that we saw a high number of behavior incidences was our cafeteria. And our cafeteria was set up in a way that all of the students sat in tables in rows faced the wall. So they faced forward, no one faced each other.
Okay.
And they were not allowed to talk to people at different tables. They had to sit, like, whoever they were sitting beside was who they were allowed to talk to. And what we sort of thought after that was, this seems like common sense now, but if we turn them around and let the kids talk to whoever they're around, then we're going to see a lower number of discipline referrals from the cafeteria. And that turned out to be true. So our number of referrals went down from there because kids were able, they weren't having to shout across tables. They were being able to talk to whoever they wanted. And we took it a step further with our upper elementary and we said they can choose where they want to sit. And that gave us good information because now we know who's, you know, not just on the playground, but who's like being left out of things, you know, who's not sitting beside anyone to eat lunch. And how can we intervene there? And so it was just a lot of undoing things and then trying to put them, put in practices that were rooted in dignity, I guess is the best way that we could describe that. So we saw our office discipline referrals go down by the hundreds.
Wow.
The first year that we sort of took this on. And yeah, it was an incredible journey. And so there are lots of, you know, the thing about trauma-informed practices is it's not like a checklist. We can't just say like, oh, we did this, this, and this, and the kids are going to be fine. There's a lot of flexibility involved in it and understanding, you know, the science behind the classroom management piece. It's not just about like throwing a visual schedule up on the board. The visual schedule is going to improve your classroom because maybe you have kids with ADHD or anxiety or, you know, whatever number of things going on in their lives. And that offers stability for them to see what's coming next. They don't have to ask 50 times because they can see it on the board.
Yeah.
There's a lot of power in that. So just explaining, you know, the why behind some of these management pieces can be really huge for teachers because I feel like it's not hit on enough in teacher preparation programs.
Yeah, that's so powerful. I love that story about the cafeteria and all the great work that you're doing. I would love to see like a training on that from you maybe someday in the future. but can you talk about, I know you did restorative circles around the COVID-19 that you led with new teachers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I've mentioned in several places before that we went back in August of 2020. We went back full-time in person. There was a virtual option, but most of our students either didn't choose to do that or came back at the semester. But with that came a lot of emotions for a lot of people. I mean, I myself was nervous because we do have a daughter who's obviously been through a lot and we weren't sure like where her immune system was at that point. So I think it was just a nice time. My administrator came to me in early August and said, hey, I think we need PD for our new teachers around just basic trauma-informed practices and some restorative practices. And I thought the last thing I want to do in August of 2020 is stand up and lecture people in a library. That sounds very counterintuitive. And so I decided I had a really big office at the time. So I brought the new teachers in and I did go over a few things like trauma-informed things. And then I said, okay, we're supposed to be talking about restorative practices. Let's do this. And we circled up and I just led them through a restorative practice around COVID. And you know, I think about teachers, maybe there's been a ton of loss and there's a ton of grief and there are so many feelings at that point. And most of those teachers were veteran teachers some of them were veteran teachers that moved from another building. And my husband is a band director. And so he was okay. In that position. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool.
So he got a new job in March of 2020 and never saw his students again. So he didn't even have the opportunity to tell his students that he was leaving. And there were a lot of big feelings around that. And so we had a couple of teachers that experienced that same thing. So, you know, I felt like we've got to talk about that. So we went through just those restorative questions, like, what happened for you during this time? We've been off for this many months, but it's also been sort of chaotic. So what's going on for you? What were you thinking and feeling at that time? What are you thinking and feeling now? So really talking through, and this was twofold. This was to teach them what a restorative circle could look like, but it was also to really allow them to emote through that and to, mm-hmm. To express their feelings, because teachers aren't asked very often how they're feeling about what's about to happen to them.
Yeah. So a lot to take in.
Yeah. Yeah. So just having a very real moment, which was, you know, awkward at first because they don't know me. And so there wasn't a whole lot of trust built up in that group yet, but I did think it was really important, and I'm glad that, I had the opportunity to do that. So.
Yeah. That's amazing that you did that. And I love that story. I read an article about some things you did with career exploration. Can you talk about the career exploration and financial literacy program you implemented?
Yeah, so that, I just think back to some of these things, I'm like, how did I have the energy? that was so, but it's because we had such a good team. So that really started in spring of 2019. So in March of 2019, our STREAM specialist, so we were a STREAM school, science, technology, research, engineering, arts, and math. Wow. And so we had which just sounds like school if you really think about it. But that's fine. So our STREAM coach is just like this incredible human being. She's not there anymore, but she was an incredible human being. She still is a great human being, but she was like such an idea person. And so this bank came to her and they said, we need to do a financial literacy thing. It's a competition with all these other branches in Missouri. And we want to use your school for it. And that's really the basis that they had. They had some good ideas, but they're also not like in schools. So she had this vision. She was like, I don't know, I'm just like picturing careers. And it was funny because at the time, our administrator kind of like called us to the carpet, called the other leadership team members to the carpet and was like, KB has this thing going on and none of you are helping her. And we were like, oh, we didn't really, you know, you're just in the daily, like, we've got to get through these things. It's March. We're thinking about testing. So she was like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. She was like, I just picture. And then she said careers. And I was like, careers are something that I can work with. I was like, I got you on careers. So what are we going to do? And so she came up with this plan. And I said, you know, here's what I can contribute. Here are my standards for Missouri. And let's go with that. And so what we ended up doing was in the spring of 2019, our third grade students, each of them filled out a career interest inventory. And then through the summer, through the first part of fall and through my maternity leave, the students, we were contacting community members. We were doing background checks. We were figuring out all of the different careers that a student might do. So we did the interest inventory. We met with students. We narrowed it down to several choices. And then we started reaching out to community members. Because what we envisioned was that our students would be partnered with a community member, a professional in our community, and that they would shadow them for the day. And then we didn't really know what it was going to look like until I came back from maternity leave, what the rest of the day entailed, but it turned out beautiful and amazing. So our students left with these community professionals and in their cars and shadowed them for the day. Like, we had realtors, we had university professors, we had like a social media influencer. We had it all, photographers.
And this was all elementary school?
Yes, entrepreneurs. Wow. So these were fourth graders now, and they got to leave, and they were in, we have a crest that our school uses. And so they were in like professional attire to go with these business people. And they got to experience what it was like to work. And then we all met back up for lunch, and we had a working lunch where the bank came in and they did their financial literacy piece, and they talked about, oh, and there's a part that I've skipped. So anyway, they talked about how, you know, you're not just making money for yourself. You're contributing to society through what you do. So in the meantime, our fourth grade teachers, who are incredible, they brought in different local nonprofits. And so the students were able to research local nonprofits that they might give money to someday. And so what was really cool was they showed up, the bank was there, they got checks with their names on them for working.
Wow.
And yeah, I know. They got checks, and then they got to cash their checks. So they went through the process of what it was like to cash a check. Because most kids don't have that skill.
Now, they were real checks, or were they like pretend checks?
No, they were real checks from the bank. And they got their money. And when they got their money, they were able to put so much. There was like a percentage that they put in a bank, which they had little piggy banks there for them, but to remind them to be financially responsible. You know, you're saving money, you're not just spending it. They were able to purchase some of our JE, Jefferson Elementary swag, which is just like crested attire that they could buy. And then they were able to give a percentage of it to the local nonprofits that they had researched. Mm-hmm. So it was huge. And the legwork behind it all was, you know, you see this like beautiful day that's come together, but it took literal months and blood, sweat, and tears of people involved. But I do have it. I mean, it's one of the highlights of my career, I will be honest. It was just incredible how the community came together, and the kids did get to, you know, work on their, we went to the golf course. They got to ride around and tour the golf course, and like,
wow.
Yeah, they got to play. It was great. So, but I do have it highlighted in my Instagram. It's something that people ask about a lot. So in my highlights, it's called Impact Project, because that's the name of the project that it was.
What's your Instagram in case people want to check it out?
My Instagram, I make it easy. It's at Counselor Carter. So okay. And then if you look at my highlights, there's one called Impact Project, and you'll get to see sort of pictures of the kids doing some things. I don't have as many from them actually working like out in the community, because I wanted to protect their identities too, just to be ethical. I have, I think, one picture with one student because I had permission from mom to post that. But yeah, it's such a huge project. And like I said, it was definitely a highlight, and I hope someday that I'll be able to do something like that again.
Yeah, I love that it started so early in elementary school, like college, career, financial aid, all that.
Yeah. And I think there's just so much potential at any grade level that you would do that in. So yeah, I could see, you know, going back to it at the junior high. It would be an even crazier adventure there.
Yeah, we'll have to collaborate on that. I'd love to do something like that.
Yeah.
So going back to all the things you've done, how have you embraced opportunities for your school counseling and leadership skills?
Yeah. So that's a really interesting question, because I remember interviewing at one point and saying, I don't think anybody went into school counseling thinking, I'm going to be a leader in the school someday. Like, I thought I was just gonna like go to school, like counsel some kids one-on-one, and then like go home, which is absolutely not what school counseling is. So I really think that my principals have leaned on me a lot, and they've made me the leader that I am. And I'm so grateful for that. So one of the things that they've always done is they've always you know, in PD, they've always said, hey, Olivia, do you want to present this? Even when we weren't doing trauma-informed, if there was PBIS or whatever it was at the time, they had me leading some of those things. So that really developed some of those speaking skills. And, you know, it's hard to speak in front of your peers, the people who are with you every single day. So, and then I ended up in my fourth year deciding, hey, I'm going to do this emerging leader program through Missouri School Counselor Association. Let's just see where it goes. And it was so incredibly powerful because it encouraged me to get on the governing board for our local school counseling association, which encouraged me to network and find all of these people that were doing the same things I was doing and, you know, seeing the power of school counseling really. So leadership connected me with school counseling in a different way. And then obviously as things ramped up for me in my professional life and I started winning awards, I was sort of thrust into this leadership role having speaking engagements, doing keynotes. I just think, and truly, you know, it's in our standards, our school counseling standards from ASCA, that we are leaders and we should see ourselves as leaders. And I think the cool thing about school counseling and leadership is it's not the same style. I thought you had to be this like big visionary leader whenever you think of leaders, right? Like I think of my superintendent who is this big visionary, like he sees the big picture and he's inspiring and he's like, God, I mean, he does all these like weird like video, like snow day videos and whatever. And that's not who I am. But the good thing about that is school counselors lead in a different way and they lead very relationally. And I think that that can be so powerful within a school. And I have seen it to be so powerful in schools. So I think if you see yourself as a leader, you're going to be a leader and people will look to you for advice and for all kinds of things. So I say, put yourself out there and do it.
Yeah, that's so true. What is one thing a lot of people don't know about you that you want them to know?
A lot of people don't know that I am an extroverted introvert. So I love to do, like we were talking about ASCA this summer. I love to do conferences. I love the big keynotes. I love the energy from the crowd, but then like afterwards I have to go and just like lay down in my bed and like not talk to anyone. So I'm very much like, I feed off of the energy in a room and then I'm just exhausted. So
yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people, I think people probably think that I've got this like big, personality that I'm just always like excited and happy. And, that's just not always the case. Sometimes I just go and lay down and stare at a wall. So,
yeah, no, that's totally fine. I get it. What are some tips you can give new elementary counselors?
There are so many,
maybe at least one tip.
Yeah. I think one of the big things I would say is, know that you're going to make mistakes. And accept them with integrity and grace and own up to them. And then, you know, the other thing is build relationships with every person in your building, from every single student to the custodians, to the cafe workers, to whoever you have in your building. Because I can't tell you the number of times that, you know, one of our cafeteria ladies who has this huge heart and just cares so deeply for our students would bring me, hey, Ms. Carter, I want to talk to you about this student because they seemed like different today. So knowing that you are with everybody in that school and that everybody contributes and that, you know, it doesn't matter what degrees anybody has, if they're connecting with kids, you need to be listening to them. I would say, those are my two big things are relationships and just knowing that you're going to make mistakes.
Well, that's so true. I agree with you. The relationships are important. Like I don't know how many times I've called on different people throughout the school, and because you have those relationships, you're able to collaborate and help students better.
Yeah.
What about administrators? Can you give tips for administrators that work with school counselors?
Yeah, I thought about this one for a while. I think one of the things that I would say to administrators is that school counselors are absolutely yes people. We do not want to say no. and when we are on board with you, we will move your bus, right? Like that's what administrators want, is for people to be go-getters and run with it and get that bus moving. But also know that because we are yes people, sometimes we are afraid to say no. And it's harder for us to say no. So know that, you may have to set boundaries for us sometimes and say, I don't think you need to take this on, or just, you know, be respectful of the yeses that we're saying to you.
Yeah.
And if your school counselor hasn't brought you their, annual agreement by like October, it's probably because they're nervous about being bossy, or they just don't want to come across as like, this is what I'm doing. You know, they're, because I've had years where I'm like, do I take this to this principal? I don't know. Like, I don't want to come across as like, I'm the boss now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if they haven't done that by October, then just reach out to them and say, hey, you know, there's this annual agreement, right? Like, do you want to meet together and talk about it? Just in a non-confrontational way, because a lot of school counselors don't feel comfortable doing it the first time. So sometimes you got to maybe bring it out of them.
Yeah, that's a great tip. And you can find that ASCA annual agreement on the American School Counselor Association website if anyone needs it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you would like our listeners to know?
No, I hope that I get to see everybody in ASCA, at ASCA in July. I'm very excited.
Yeah.
I'm not presenting, but you can always come say hi to me. And
yes, I definitely would say hi to you too.
Yeah. I love when people come say hi to me. I'm not scary at all.
So now people will be fangirling with you, like, oh, it's Olivia Carter.
I know. No, everyone will be like, ah, it's Alma, which is so exciting because I love her. And whatever session she is speaking at, I am definitely going. So you can find me wherever she is.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's all I got right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. At the end of our podcast, we like to do the Sunshine Spotlight. Can you tell me at least one thing that's made you happy?
One thing that has made me happy this week is that it's finally getting warm here. And while it was kind of a rough week for my family, we all had the stomach bug.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But the sun is shining. Well, it's about to storm today, so it'll get cool again. But, you know, it was in the 80s yesterday when I left school, so we love that. And it was nice to just feel the sunshine and have that for us. So I'm excited. It feels like summer is coming.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have to say, definitely my sunshine spotlight is getting to interview you. So excited to meet you and talk with you. And I really appreciate all that you've shared. And hopefully people can take back what you talked about and maybe implement some of your ideas, or maybe reach out to you on your Instagram now that they have your Instagram.
Yeah.
She does have some amazing stories that she posts on her Instagram story and her Instagram post. So be sure you guys check it out. It was at Counselor Carter, correct?
At Counselor Carter. Yes. And a lot of people come for school counseling and they stay because my kids are cute. So it is a hodgepodge of my life and my kids and school counseling, because I can't separate them out into pieces at this point. So I'm excited. I'm excited to see you in July, and thank you for having me. This has been amazing.
Yeah, no problem. If you could just say goodbye to all of our listeners out there.
All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to Reach Higher Riverside. You can follow us on Twitter at RH Riverside. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel at Reach Higher Riverside. You can also subscribe to our iTunes or Google Play Music and give us a rating. Thank you so much for listening in. We appreciate all of you tuning in. And as Michelle Obama would say, when they go low, we reach higher.